date.
Sounds like Chris might be wearing Jason Terry in this.
You can tell just by the guitar tonage.
You can tell it puts him in a different mood versus the Dirk.
It's true.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bowling for Soup. And the single Saturday.
Available for free on the band's Facebook right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
When does this thing drop, as we say in the industry?
Well, it's sort of dropped. Things are,
the whole album has dropped?
No, the album drops April 26th. But
okay.
Like, you know, you used to drop singles, and then you drop others. And now, it just you just sort of just put stuff out there now. Things are different.
The whole music industry confuses me, and then it's changing all the time. So I go from sort of confused to extremely confused in short amounts of time. This is, by the way, Jarrett, our good friend, Jarrett Reddick, the man you see on all of your Bowling for Soup products, singing, and just being Jarrett. I don't know. It's weird because we talk to you guys and we know you as dudes and groups parties with you, and that's weird.
But we do not remember those parties most of the time. We actually discuss each and every time I see Groobs out. I'm going to be like, dude, I'm going to totally remember this. And he's like, me too. And then the next day, did we see each other last night, or did I imagine that?
It's I don't know. It's
that's a sign of a good party.
Exactly.
I always think of it like if you saw your superheroes at a mall, if you saw Batman just kind of thumbing through some books at Barnes & Noble. It's weird with your rock and rollers to see them like at Highland Village eating a taco or something like that, which has happened with you and I before.
That is true. But isn't it like that with anybody?
See, they
like,
eat.
For you guys, though.
But they're just hanging out.
Look, he's just taking a drink. To wash it down,
wow,
just like a person.
He just lives in a house. How weird.
You guys see sports guys all the time, though.
Yeah.
And, like, that's not weird to you. And
right.
For me, it's always those that I don't expect to see. So it's like running into music people at a music event. You're sort of like walking through the room, and it's cool
sure.
to see Bonnie Raitt or
right.
Dave Grohl or whatever. But then it's like, Michael J. Fox! He's right there. You
yeah.
know what I mean? That's Alex P. Keaton.
That is Alex P. Keaton.
That's when you start to get a little freaked out, you know?
Yeah.
The ones that you don't expect to run into.
Well, and that can happen. That can happen in this great great little city of ours.
When did you graduate high school?
1990.
Okay. So did I.
Yeah. Is that true?
Yeah.
So you're...
We look good.
So were you sitting around writing songs then? When did you actually start writing songs?
I started writing songs a couple of years after that, actually. I mean, I was in bands my whole teenage life. I started out playing drums, and then...
You weren't a jock?
So drum was the one that you started when you were a kid, and they kind of make you have to choose something.
Right. Well, here's exactly how that went. I did the thing where you play all sports through grade school and junior high until that point where you have to decide. And it was like... I was staying the same height and getting wider.
Sure.
And the other kids
whiter
were...
Whiter or wider?
Both.
Okay.
Right. Staying out of the sun. And but other kids were, you know, looking like these huge, vans. Kids just came to school looking like Mack trucks, you know. And I don't think I want to play football with
yeah.
them. So I chose music and played drums in the marching band. And
well, yeah, because everybody has to choose at some point something to try for... Grade school, and
I love that you were in marching band.
The guys that didn't want to play a trumpet or something went drums. You're probably too cool.
Right, yeah, like basically all the rock and roll guys played drums, even if they weren't drummers.
Right, because there's nothing else cool to play.
Yeah, I mean, you were just, that was, yeah, that's exactly
like
right.
Wind woods aren't cool?
Yeah, well, I played the clarinet. That's not cool.
The clarinet,
well, it is
the oboe,
now. See, that's just it. You don't know that when you're in high school. You don't. Well, then you didn't. But you know, it's like now. I wish I could play the saxophone. I mean, like, that would be amazing.
You know what? That's my position on piano.
Yeah.
Because if you can get to, like,
when you're a little kid, that's like detention. If you
right.
Piano
well,
class,
and my wife is saying, should we see about piano lessons for Brett?
You should force him into it.
And I just
because later he'll thank you when he's wooing a girl with a.
But entry level piano is like entry level figure skating.
An original composition.
Well,
you know
just anything. If you can just sit down and whip out something on a piano,
yeah, that's cool.
That's not
piano
chopsticks,
is really cool. Yeah,
I have a 5-year-old.
You will have a girl in bed within the half hour.
I have 2 kids, 8 and 5. We have a 5-year rule. They have to start when they're 5. They can quit when they're 10, but they're going to thank me their whole life. But they do have to take piano lessons.
Really?
Yes, absolutely. And it's not because I want them to be involved in music or anything really that I want them to do. I want them to do whatever they want. But there's a discipline.
But it better
to
be
it.
Music.
Well, no, but right. No, but there's a discipline to it. I mean, it helps you with math. But the other thing is that if you can learn to play the piano, you can play any instrument. So if you have that foundation, like they can decide, okay, I want to play this, or I want to play this, or I want to get into more into dancing or whatever, and it just helps.
Man, I might need you to help parent my kids because my wife, when we go back and forth on this, she basically waits for the kids to give total approval before we put them in something like that. And
yeah,
she's
they
like,
want to quit. They tried it
she's
for
like,
a month.
Yeah, I talked with Maddie, and she just can't decide what we're going to do. So we're just going to sit this year out of everything and just kind of like watch Disney Channel and just see if we can maybe
see. That's like asking them if they want to go to school.
I know.
You know, you have to.
But the five-year rule at five.
And it's
at
just
five.
On the one thing. Uh-huh. They go in and out of sports.
You're not Earl Woods.
And they go in. You know, Emma has kind of gone from soccer to dance, and now she's into dance and sort of deciding now whether she's going to stay with that. And Jack is just, you know, he's doing soccer and basketball and all these other things. I ask for one thing, and we battle it. And the wife is so good about, you know, making sure that they practice and all of that stuff. And you know, they have to.
But. So you got a giant piano everyone's tripping over all the time?
No. It's just...
Or you got a little keyboard?
A little keyboard thing, yeah.
And, okay, because that was the other thing. My wife's like, we got to get the piano to see if they're interested in piano lessons. And I'm like, well, wait a minute.
So you're going to buy,
don't we get
spend
the,
a couple thousand on a
yeah,
piano?
Yeah, don't we find out if they like piano and then invest in the piano down the road? Isn't that... We
or
have,
you buy it and force them into it.
We have a lot of discussions
now,
like this.
It's possible, Jarrett, though, that much like you're describing yourself in sports, perhaps, a kid might not... You can't force... Like, you can't teach being musically inclined, right?
That's true.
Are you saying his children are genetically designed to be musicians? Whereas
maybe more
Michael
so,
Finley's
but just,
kids may be good at basketball.
Just not everybody, if everybody took piano for 5 years, doesn't mean they're ever going to get it necessarily, right?
That's actually absolutely true. And I think that if I didn't, if they, Emma would be the best example because Jack is just now starting because he's just now 5. But if I didn't see that she had some sort of born-in ability and she was just like frustrated and wanted to quit... Then, you know, at that point, you know, she's got something, and it's definitely there. Her teacher thinks that. And, you know, I think.
How do you make her the next Hannah Montana?
Well, I wouldn't do that to her.
Oh, okay.
I wouldn't do that.
But well, obviously, that was like a calculated move, right?
I would just support her in whatever she wanted to do, you know?
Making Hannah Montana, though. The creation of her.
Right.
Miley Cyrus. That's her dad saying...
That's Evil Network suits.
But isn't that him working a deal with Disney saying, hey, my kid has a little something. Maybe I've given her piano lessons for 4 years. Now, let's make something around her.
I don't know. I know.
Why don't you know that?
Well, I don't know everything.
Oh.
Most everything.
All right, it's Jarrett from Bowling for Soup. It's nice for you to make a few moments for us because you leave for England tomorrow?
I do. Yes, our second acoustic tour, Eric and I going over there on an acoustic little jaunt.
Just Eric and you.
Just me and Eric.
What does Chris think about this?
Well, Chris still gets paid, but he doesn't have to go.
Oh, really?
So
Chris loves it.
Chris is stoked.
So he's going to stick with the darts for
exactly.
A little while.
Chris gets to go to his dart nights. He gets to, you know, he gets to do his Chris thing.
Is there a Chris Burney Jarrett rivalry a little bit?
Not at all.
It's like a
Bob and Dan thing. I think they're good friends, but like Chris would text me about your fantasy football prowess.
Oh, about mine?
Well, he just felt that you thought you were better than you really were.
That's probably true, yeah.
Which is true in every band where they all look at the front man and they're like, whatever.
No, I probably do think I'm better at fantasy football than I really am. But it's like poker for me.
We figured that out, Jared. Yeah. Don't worry about it. We all know.
Thanks a lot.
Oh, look at the guy with the trophy over there.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Don't worry about him.
I know.
So, okay, how long are you in the UK?
We're over there for about 2 weeks. And then, you know, hopefully no volcanoes this year.
I can't believe we forgot about that. We talked with Bowling for Soup, and they were stuck over there with the famous Icelandic volcano.
Yeah, that's right.
2010.
I was actually at the last show of the tour, and the American had emailed me and said that our flight was canceled. They were not rescheduling it, and you know, we had talked to a rep, and they were like, "Look, it could be as long as 10 weeks." And I was seriously, I was trying to get, we offered to play on a cruise ship for free to get us home. I was going to take a job as a longshoreman on a ship. I mean, whatever. I just like, I don't care. I got to go home.
You didn't want to be stuck in Southampton for 7 weeks.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, I got kids.
And right.
I had already been over there for 3 weeks. I was ready to go, you know.
Laundry had to be done.
Because ash could get in the engines, as I remember.
Uh-huh.
Like the ash up in the air from the volcano.
You couldn't get over it fast enough from England, I guess, was the deal. You couldn't get high enough fast enough.
It does seem like one of those stories, though, where we over-panicked initially.
Couldn't you just go the other way? Isn't there another way?
That's what I thought.
Like the world is round, right? So there's not just one way.
Go the other way, right. It takes a little longer, but you'll get there.
Just take a longer route.
More gas.
All right. Now, we have Jared in here to promote all things Bowling for Soup and the UK tour. So if you are in Liverpool or Newcastle or any of those cities in the next couple weeks... And you're hearing us right now. What is the matter with you?
Yeah.
But beyond that, the new album, all that. But I also wanted to ask you about a particular vein of your career, the covers. I know you texted me during one of our sampler platters a while back about just the music industry. So maybe coming up next year, we can get into that just a little bit, Jared, if you'd be so kind.
That would be fantastic.
All right. It's Jared from Bowling for Soup. We're up here, and we're talking sports on the ticket.
I walked along the avenue. I never thought I'd meet a girl like you. Meet a girl like you.
Go to theticket.com for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see Coheed and Cambria April 9th at the Palladium Ballroom. Do you hate them?
No, they're great. We did Warped Tour 2004 with them. It was awesome.
I thought that's your rival.
We don't have any rivals.
No?
No, that's...
It's not like Anchorman.
We're boring.
Squaring off against the other channel.
This is Jared from Bowling for Soup. All right. And this that you're listening to is also Jared from Bowling for Soup, right?
First of all, what do you think of my return music selection?
Very nice. It's I get it. It's a nice little sync, little segue.
It is. I will tell you, everyone listens to music differently. Check out this fade. everyone listens to music differently, and I, for some reason, become infatuated with the cover tunes and just the many evolutions of music. It's not that I'm against new music. It's just that I feel I'm in love with... What's the kids' choir that I'm obsessed with now? That I've been obsessed with for like 3 days, Jarrett. It's the Scala and Kolsny. It's like a Belgium women's choir. Where's your version of Creep?
For right here.
All right, we played this on the show yesterday.
Scala and Kolsny.
Did you tweet about this morning?
I did.
Yeah, I saw that. I didn't know what you were talking about.
Okay, hold on. I'm gonna play what I tweeted about this morning, and I'm actually going somewhere with this. Let's see. Here it is.
So does it cost money? You want to do Iran? Does it cost anything?
No. No.
Do you have to pay them something if you should make money off it?
Now, here's basically the way that it works. You can record any song you want and put it out there. The only thing is that there's something called a mechanical royalty that is paid to, basically for the use of a song, that is paid to the writer and or his publisher, who actually own the rights to the song. So those monies would then be collected by the record label or whomever put the song out, and they would be paid directly to either him directly or her or the publishing company.
So you want to do that song. Who did that?
Flock of Seagulls.
Yeah. Basically, we do that song.
You put it out.
Right.
But you don't make a lot of money off of it.
We don't make any money off of it. Unless we were to make money off the actual sales of the recording, which we won't, because that's all, you know, gets into record company monopoly money. But so, I mean, it's a really complicated formula, and I have a theory that I think it's way more complicated than it should be, just to confuse us all, because I have no idea. I get these statements and I sort of read through and I think I know, but I don't know. I don't really know anything.
Yeah.
You know, but no, we could put out a whole album's worth of covers, and we wouldn't have to pay any money. I mean, we've done tons of covers. We did Britney Spears cover for Freaky Friday. We've done Summer of 69, this cover. I mean,
did,
it's tough.
Melt With You is awesome.
Yeah.
See, I really love your cover tunes. In fact, I'll listen to just a playlist of your cover tunes.
Right.
That's what I'm really into.
Well, yeah, and the way that we approach cover tunes is, from a musical standpoint, is we overly simplify them and just make them sound like our band.
Yeah.
And with exception of the Iran cover with the random keyboard solo that comes in the middle of that. That was a record label call on that, but you know, whatever.
The suits got you again.
So there's actually meetings where they listen to your version and they're like, nah, we need this.
Yeah, in that case there was, because actually that song is an interesting story, because very seldom, you know, for those who keep up with Bowling for Soup history, we were on Jive Records for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we were signed as almost a guinea pig. They had no rock bands at the time. It was Britney Spears, NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, R. Kelly, and they were setting records, and it was crazy, selling all kinds of CDs. We basically came along, and we just managed to stay this mid-level band, and we made them a lot of money, and we sold a bunch of records, and they just sort of left us alone. Let us do our own thing. In situations like this, though, with the Iran thing, it's not even a song we wanted to do. It's a song that the president of the label called me directly and said, hey, I really want you to do this.
That's weird.
Because, you know, they had really liked our version of Summer of 69. And at that time, that video game Grand Theft Auto had just come out, and this song was on commercial.
Yes,
and so
it was.
He thought he was, you know, that he had this great idea.
We'd capitalize on the...
Exactly. So we're going to capitalize on the popularity of this video game, and you guys go do the song. And we did it. And looking back on it now, it was a good idea. It didn't really come to fruition, but... you know, I mean, we have the song out there now, and it's been used in a bunch of stuff. So
yeah, I mean, you know, I dig it.
But that you—it's just odd that you don't have to pay use a whole song.
Let me explain. I'm going. I got some audio here I wanted to play for you on this very topic. This is from the documentary that will be an upcoming Bad Radio Reports called "Copyright Criminals," and I think we were talking about this, and Jarrett texted me about how the music industry works. The setup here is many of the most famous albums from our youth of the hip-hop variety. Public Enemy, Nation of Millions Hold Us Back, De La Soul, 3 Feet High and Rising, Paul's Boutique, Beastie Boys. They could not exist anymore because of the way sampling litigation has made it impossible to pay everyone for a right to use their samples and then to still make any money on your own, or not to lose money.
An important thing to note, and this is when it comes to money, it's sampling or using a portion of something in a work that you're creating is a completely different thing.
Than covering. Like if you leave all the lyrics the same.
If we cover it, and I could even change a couple of lyrics and it would still be sort of like, I could adapt like one thing if they said San Francisco and I wanted to say Dallas or whatever. I would still be covering the song. But I have a story for you, if you want to play the audio first, about us trying to use a section of a song, and actually it'll put it all in perspective.
All right, here's the audio from Copyright Criminals, I hope.
It is cheaper, easier, and more predictable if you want to cover somebody's song entirely than if you want to take 3 seconds of somebody's song. That doesn't make any sense. Why should an entire song be easier and cheaper to do than 3 seconds of somebody's song?
This is Little Roger and the Goosebumps doing Stairway to Gilligan's Island here.
You have the right to cover any record as long as you don't change the words. You can cover Stairway to Heaven. But if you try to change the words and make it Stairway to Gilligan's Island, which someone tried to do, Led Zeppelin will shut you down in 2 seconds.
The mate was a mighty sailing man, skipper brave and sure.
Funny idea. Led Zeppelin was down with it.
Right. Well,
does it?
Well, here's... I don't really know that I have an opinion, because, I mean, it just is the way that it is. I mean, I guess I sort of understand that they want to... That artists, most artists would want to retain sort of that, you know, their integrity, their musical integrity and what they created, and not really have you, you know, either, some people don't want to be made fun of, some people don't want it adapted into something that they're not a fan of or whatever. I mean, but again, you could cover it, and, you know, we cover our own songs sometimes, and we did, you know, we do a song, Belgium, that we put on every album, and we did it as a polka. And, you know, whatever. I mean, it's there's no artistic integrity for us. But I will tell you this story, though. This is true. We have a song. It's a minute and a half song called The Last Rock Show. And in the song, all we wanted to do was, raise the roof and let it burn. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to do the We Don't Need No Water, Let the Thing mm-hmm. Burn.
Right,
thing.
Sure.
All right, just for us to say that line and chant it, we would have had to have paid, George Clinton wanted $12,000 and 25% of ownership of the song.
Really?
Yeah. And that's what, just for us to be able to say that line in the way that they say it in the thing. And it was just like, that was our second album on Jive, to where, like, you know, coming up when we're doing albums on our own, much like a lot of the early hip-hop stuff, we didn't know any better, so if we wanted to take something like that, we just did it.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, we didn't really... I can't really even think of anything off the top of my head that ended up actually coming out, but, you know, that was harsh reality for me, because I was like, I don't really know that I even want to do this song anymore if we can't do this, because it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, the best example... I think it was Biz Markie. I'm trying to remember, and you might have even covered this already, Donnie, but one of Biz Markie's early tunes, when he really got sued hard, he was adapting a song from like the 60s that sold 20 copies, and the guy is an old man now living in Ireland or something, and Biz Markie made it a hit record mm-hmm. 25 years later.
Yeah.
And the guy was really annoyed that he touched his masterpiece that did not sell at all, and took him to court and won, of course.
Yeah.
And that changed everything, to a point where now sampling almost doesn't exist, because I guess the artists who are going to be sampled ask for such a ridiculous amount of money that, or you have what you have Girl Talk, you have Danger Mouse doing and they make these pieces of art, but they can never sell them, right?
It gets super scary now. The last record we did with Jive, it's called Sorry for Partying. It came out a year ago, October. And now they have a whole department where all their whole job is to listen through and red flag any signs of anything that could possibly be a sample or anything like that. I mean, they're trained for that. And so where they would hear sort of what we call a drum loop, you know, which is just something that goes through a song, you know, just yeah. to give it sort yeah. of that dynamic. You have to then show documentation of how you own that, or they're taking it off, you know. And some of the recording software now comes out with,
Default drum, and
you can, if you actually purchase the software, in most cases, you're granted the license to be able to use that in whatever you want, you know? So, yeah, it gets a little bit tricky.
So, you're no longer with this label.
No.
What does that really mean to anybody? What does it mean to you, and what does it mean to people that like you guys?
To me, it means a lot more legwork and figuring out how to do a few of the things that the label was still doing for us, like mostly admin, and you know, obviously we don't have, you know, their pockets to go to record a video anymore. We're paying for it ourselves, you know, which this day and age, you know, we can pretty much just do that on our computers. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, those things have changed. We don't have to get approval for anything anymore. And, you know, I mean, that's great for the people, for us fan wise. I mean, we've been together 17 years. We pretty much have our fan base that is our fan base. It sort of passes between friends and from generation to generation. It is what it is. I mean, it really doesn't grow. It really doesn't shrink. It's just really comfortable and even. And so they won't really even notice that anything's different.
I would think. I guess I just don't know much about music and how you guys make money. I would think you're all loaded for life.
No. I mean that I think that you'd be surprised how many artists aren't. I mean, we have to work. I mean, it's
is it harder to make money than it used to be?
It would be if we were just starting out, I think. I mean,
because here's my thought process on that before you answer. It's just now I seldom buy an entire CD unless it's from 20 years ago. Like, I bought Automatic for the People, and I tried to buy 3 Feet High and Rising. It's not on iTunes. Who knew? But you know,
never buy an actual hard CD
I would
anymore,
not,
right?
I would not hear that the new whatever album
you buy it
out,
on iTunes.
And I need the whole thing. Well, even then, I often cherry-pick 4 or 5 songs, and so that's a lot less money in the artist's pocket. I think.
I just mean even the actual physical CD.
Depending on what artist that you're talking about, because here is where the Bowling for Soup crossroads starts now, see, because we are on our own. But if you're on a major label, I was just explaining this, I mean, they spend so much money and there's so many people working on these things and try to explain themselves into having even a role in what you're doing no artists on major label that are putting out major label albums that are selling less than 800,000 to a million copies are making any money off record royalties. That's just not happening. The songwriters are getting paid. That's happening. But the artists are making their money in other ways, which for us, touring and merch and, you know, licenses, which is TV, film placements and stuff like that, you know.
And then giving away songs on the internet.
Yeah, but then
does that turn into money down? I mean, I know it's a theory.
It's advertising. Yeah. I mean, you know, but here now we're our own label. And so you going to cherry pick those 4 songs, that's why we give you the song. We want you to. We want you to go buy 4 songs and hopefully that does turn into a revenue stream. You know, I'll let you know in 6 months.
That excites people to get out to your show and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's still all you know, T-shirts and stuff like that. But, I mean, you know, we're having to – you have to move into so many other areas. I mean, for me personally, I can't speak for the rest of my guys, but, you know, I'm just always working on something, you know, whether it's the Phineas and Ferb thing that I do or just writing for other bands or writing for other artists or whatever, you know.
Does that give you cred with your kids' friends? That you're the Phineas and Ferb theme song voice.
It does, yeah. I mean, it's
because it gives me cred with my my neighbor kids. Dude, that I say I know that guy.
I introduced my daughter to you at the Great Game, and she couldn't believe that she met you.
Yeah, that's
because of Phineas.
Can we roll all that? Do we have that handy?
There's 100.
Yeah.
Summer vacation. The school comes along just to end it. So the annual.
Come on, Dan.
For our generation
is finding a good way to spend it. Like maybe.
Do you remember?
Giving a monkey a show.
Yeah, we actually do this at our shows now.
Oh, okay.
You have to.
Yeah, you do. No,
what are you going to do? It's the number. What? Surfing tidal waves, creating nanobots, or locating Frankenstein's brain. Hey, I'm off work today.
That's awesome. It's really him.
It really is.
See, I didn't think he really knew the words.
It's not as easy without your teleprompter, huh?
I wish I had one of those, man. 39 years old.
You guys have done a few things. You're on a couple episodes, right?
Yeah, I actually play a character in the show. The character's name is Danny. He's the lead singer for the band Love Handle on the show. So I actually just did my lines for the movie that's coming out next summer, and it's pretty exciting.
Phineas and Ferb movie.
Yeah. Now, this movie, they just
alternate
decided,
revenue stream.
Right,
Dan.
See, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You throw as many ropes out as you can.
Right.
And then you just pull them in, and sometimes you get a fish.
Yeah. And so, when you were writing that song, Because a lot of those things refer to things that happened in the episode throughout the first couple years, right? Did they have to tell you the plot of...
Here's what happened. I actually didn't...
Giving a monkey a shower,
I didn't write that. So basically what happened was is they came to me. They had a 30-second song. They had that in tech, which you hear at the first. And they basically said, can you take this and turn it into a 3.5-minute song that we can play for promo or play on the radio? And I said, yeah. So they let me see a couple of episodes, actually like the first, I guess, 7 or 8 before they were even done. And I went home and I wrote them a song in 20 minutes. I basically took that, made it the first verse, and then wrote a pre-chorus, chorus, bridge, and a second verse. And they loved it. And it's that. So that's the song. Like, if you buy the Phineas and Ferb soundtrack and you... Today is going to be a great day. That's the song that I wrote.
It's a cool show to be a part of, too. You're not, like, part of Wubsy or something gay. You know what I mean? That's a good show. Like, you can sit and watch it with your kid.
Oh, it is.
Parents
it's
like
funny, yeah.
Phineas and Ferb is strong to quite strong.
You know what? I was thinking this, too. Tom said a couple people called in and mentioned, like, Weird Al.
Yeah.
Doing parodies of Michael Jackson song or something.
See, I think
was that different back then?
See, I think what I hear is, and this is all hearsay, but I've asked this question before too. What I've heard is that he goes and gets permission from the artist to do it, but I think it's almost like being knighted. Like when Weird Al wants to do your song.
Really? You don't, Michael Jackson is impressed when Weird
Al
calls?
You don't say no. You know? I mean, you're stoked.
So there's no such thing as if it's a parody, then he can't get in trouble or get any.
There is.
Because that's what I heard once before.
I don't believe this story. I don't believe that he called Kurt Cobain and he was excited.
As it's a parody, they're making fun, a parody, then you can, it's allowed to do.
Yeah, I think there's a real fine line. And I think actually there's a lot of rap artists. There's a rap artist on my little record label. His name's MC Lars. And he tries that angle a lot in that he'll try to use a section of a song and try to classify it as parody. And sometimes his people will let it go through and sometimes they don't. So that's where it gets really confusing for me is what's parody, you know, and what is just using something.
I got to write something too.
They're kicking us out of here.
I've been dreaming of come back to Texas for so many years to do a
summer bash,
song to that.
Summer bash.
I didn't want to bury it at summer bash.
Oh,
ticket stock.
Jerry,
Tom wants you out of here because
safe travels in England.
He's the only front man, right? He's the only front man on this show.
Tom hates when you're booked for the show.
What do you got to plug?
I got to plug some stuff. I got to plug. I did a version of the FC Dallas chant. That is on fcdallas.com, and there you can download it. It's only 99 cents, and it's for charity.
I'm in.
So go grab that, and also giving a plug to my my FC Dallas peeps. The MLS Cup rematch is April the 8th versus Colorado. If you meet at the Londoner at 6 p.m., the first 1,500 people get a 22-ounce beer mug.
Which Londoner?
At the Londoner, right by the stadium. April 26th, Fishing for Woos, Bowling for Soup's new album, and then... come see us here in Dallas in Denton at the Rockin' Rodeo on June 2nd and June 4th at the Aardvark in Fort Worth.
Done.
Also, check out
all of them.
BowlingForSoup.com and PeopleOnVacation.com. Check it out. Follow me on Twitter, JARET2113. I'm good at this.
Yeah, you are good. I'll tweet up your Twitter thing and we'll double tweet.
He's better than you are.
He is?
That's super
mean.
Well,
I'm just saying, you just sounded very... choppy there, like I do.
No,
I,
I'm not good
we
at broadcasting.
We have no flow. We can't talk.
Jared, safe travels, my good man.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
Jared.
All right, 5 till 3.